Genesis chapter 22.
After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. He said, Take your son, your only son Yitzhak, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and his son Yitzhak. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to the young men, Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Yitzhak, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. And they went both of them together. And Yitzhak said to his father, Abraham, My father! And he said, Here I am, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told them, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Yitzhak his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham! And he said, Here I am. He said, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. Now Abraham went up and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the place The Lord will provide, as it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and I have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham lived at Beersheba. Now after these things, it was told to Abraham, Behold, Milcah also has borne children to your brother Nahor, who is his firstborn, who is his brother, Kemuel, the father of Aram, Chesed, Hazo, Pildash, Yidlaf, and Bethuel. Bethuel fathered Rebekah. These eight Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. Moreover, his concubine, whose name was Reumah, bore Teba, Geham, Tehash, and Maakah.
Okay, any thoughts, input? Okay, no one has any thoughts. Now, after these things, remember what happened after these things? What were the things before all this happened? 21st chapter? Something came, and God had an appointed time for Sarah to have a child. Remember that one? First issue. Point in time. Not just happenstance. He came at a specific point in time for her to get pregnant at a specific point in time for the birth of her son. And the second thing took place was what? Had to take place with Ishmael. He said things or did something, maybe bullied the kid, I don't know. Doesn't sound like exactly what took place. And then that really made Sarah mad, right? And then she said, kick him out. Okay, along with Hagar. Get rid of both of them. And what was Abraham's response? That's evil. All right. And then Elohim came along and says, no, do exactly what Sarah told you to do, because it's Isaac, your seed shall be called after. Ishmael, your seed will not be called after. So he actually has one seed that's going to be his, quote, only begotten son. This is why this particular chapter in 22 refers to it as the only begotten son. Because that's where the seed was going to be transferred to. It was not going to be transferred to Ishmael. We transferred to Isaac. What does tested mean?
A trial.
A trial, okay. Well, it says, and he tested Abraham. What did he test Abraham about? Well, he's loyal, dedicated, liar, truth, what?
Prove his character.
Prove his character. Okay, Ellie.
Did he believe God?
Did he believe God? Okay.
Tested his faith.
Tested his faith. Okay. Sounds all cool, right? Sounds logical, right? Now, why would, if that's the case, why would God test his trust in him? Why would God turn around and say, Abraham, I don't think you really trust me. Therefore, I'm going to put a trial upon you that's so devastating, I'll see whether or not you have enough guts to do it. Is that what he said? No. We can interpret that way, but the word test in Hebrew means, I am going to do something. I am going to prove something. So now he's going to prove Abraham. Why prove him? Because Abraham was unprovable? No. He did it because he was told. Now, we'll go a little bit into the book of Hebrews today to understand exactly the mind and thought of a man named Abraham. Let's throw these words out here. And this is Exodus 16, verse 4. And then Yahuwah said unto Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out to gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove whether they will walk in my law or not. Oh. So, did God test Abraham to prove whether he would walk in his law? No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that, to walk in his law. The law came later. And Moses said to the people, fear not, for Elohim is come to prove you, that his fear may be before you, your face, that ye sin not. Oh, did Abraham, was that God came to before Abraham to make it get to, for Abraham to be so terrified and afraid of him that he'd be terrified of sinning? The man was already upright. The man was already just. The man was already appointed to do a job. So we have to be careful to not assume something there prior to the Torah, quote, law being written down. And Apostle Paul talks about that in the book of Galatians. Before the Torah, why was the Torah added? Because of sin and transgression. According, added to what? Added to the promise given to Abraham. The Torah was added after, not before Abraham, after Abraham. Because of sin and transgression. And so we go through these in Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and all that kind of stuff. God is testing these people because of sin. He's not testing them whether they believe. He's testing them of sin. Because that's what the law in the book of Galatians says. You may disagree with it, but that's beside the point. Apostle Paul said it. Yes.
Where does it say that it was added after Abraham? Because I thought it said...
Galatians.
It does? Okay. Because I thought there was another part where it says Abraham kept his statutes and his commandments.
Oh.
So what would commandments...
Don't get it confused with the Torah.
Okay.
When you use the word Torah, it doesn't come into existence until after... Didn't come into existence until after... Book of Leviticus is the first time the word shows up. Yeah. And that was after the Ten Commandments came down. Well, you can disagree with me on all this. Then you just say, I don't know what we're talking about. I just want to get back here to Abraham. Yes.
Well, actually, in all fairness, it says just a couple chapters that Abraham kept my commandments, my statutes, my charge, and he'll instruct his household.
I have no problem with that one.
Okay.
What does that mean? Whatever God asked him, he did. That's just apart from threatening to kill him. Right? And the Ten Commandments comes in. You got Ten Commandments, and it's a threat of, I'm going to kill you. Did God actually test Abraham at 75 years old to test him out, go in the promised land, to see if he could kill him? No. He's there for us to understand something. Remember the book of Genesis, the commentary, a lot of commentaries, consider the book of Genesis fable. They don't believe it. They don't trust it. They know there's no such thing as a flood. There's no such thing as Noah. There's no such thing as Adam and Eve. Nothing actually took place. It's all fable. It's all stories. It's like a picture. It has no value. It's unimportant. I told you last time, during the time of the Messiah, and in very extreme Orthodox today, Genesis is not part of the Torah. It's just a writing. Like all the others they call writings. What happens if we come into the 21st century, great people with great minds brought in Genesis and said, no, it's part of the Torah. No, that's brought in later on in history, dude. When it brought in during the time of the Messiah, they knew exactly what we're talking about. I don't reproof. You don't believe me, that's okay. Just read what Messiah said and understand that's what took place. Genesis was not considered a valuable book. And extreme Orthodox has said the book of the whole Tanakh should start out with Exodus chapter 1. And Genesis should be, that's ancient. Who cares about that? Yes.
What I'm hearing might be different from what somebody else is hearing, but it sounds to me like you're not saying Abraham and Noah didn't obey God.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
It sounds like you think that they did, and maybe even kept some of the festivals.
They probably obeyed God far greater than Christians do today.
But it wasn't written down like it was when the commandments were given.
It didn't have to be written down.
Right, okay.
They just believed God and did what God told them to do. They didn't have to have evidence written down. We don't look at a world that once was before the flood, during the time. How many gods do you think there were before the flood? Billions of billions? No. They all knew there was one God. They knew that the power of that one God. Doesn't say that they worshiped all sorts of pagans. Paganology came in after the flood, not before.
God's laws were in effect, Richard, you're saying, but they just weren't written down.
They're what?
God's laws were in effect at that time. They just weren't written down.
Laws. You mean the Torah? You mean the Torah that it was about Mount Sinai? What he added? What says he added the Torah, he added the Ten Commandments after the promise given to Abraham. Read Galatians. It's real clear. Yes.
And it sounds a bit confusing, but in Abraham's time, there would be certain laws which are in the Torah, which would have already been known and done.
Already known.
So, for example, the laws of what animal is clean to eat and what it is not clean to eat. Abraham already knew that. But it's not written down all the way until hundreds of years later. Now, there's other laws done the same way. How you treat your slave versus how you not treat your slave. There are laws which they already obeyed. But Moses wrote down, it's not like he invented all these laws on the spot. They've been around for a couple thousand years before he arrived to actually have them all written down. So the law, there are aspects of the law, there are details that may not have been written down for Abraham, but he already obeyed them anyway because they were common knowledge. Everyone did it.
Everyone. It's like we think it's a pagan world from the very beginning, stage one, Adam and Eve. No, it wasn't. We think it's that way, but it doesn't say that. Now remember, it says there, Apostle Paul says, 430 years later, it was added. The Torah was added. Why was it added? Because Abraham was a sinner? Because Abraham didn't believe God? Abraham was a liar? Yes.
Okay.
Watch what you're saying. God did not judge him on that one.
I have a couple things to say. You know, Messiah being the Word made flesh. So when I think of the word Torah, I think of the Word of the Lord being made flesh.
Okay, so anything was said in Genesis before Moses came on the scene is not the Word of the Lord.
No, I'm not saying
No, the Word of the Lord is not law.
No, I'm not
saying Word of the Lord is what?
I'm not saying that the Torah is okay. The written law. Using the word Torah to refer to the written law is something that's kind of a tradition, but I mean, in our language, right? The other thing is the reason that God had to have Moses write everything down for that group of people is because they'd been in Egypt for so long and
had
gone against it for
they
so long.
They were in captivity. They were slaves.
Right.
They were bonded people.
Like
they
us.
Didn't have the freedom to read what they wanted to read. They didn't have the freedom to study what they wanted to study. They hadn't the freedom to walk where they wanted to walk. They were in prison. By the power of the eternal creator of heaven and earth, they were in prison. God told Abraham, I'm going to put them in prison. I put them in bondage. Why? Because Abraham, you're a sinner. I got to punish your kids 400 years from now? No. Now we have to ask ourselves, how come Abraham understood something we don't understand? That way we have to put ourselves in Abraham's shoes at this very important time in his life. Coming to the very end of his life, not the end, but close to it. And he's been very loyal to God from the very beginning. I'll prove that to you in the book of Hebrews in a minute. Well, no, let's go to Hebrews. Let's go to the book of Hebrews. I mean, a lot of people take the book of Hebrews and consider it a lousy book, rotten book, unacceptable book, and throw it out. That's fine. If you believe that, then you don't have to pay attention to a single thing I'm going to say. Hebrews. Verse 11th chapter. Now this is where we have to pay attention. The writer, I know, yes, Hebrew is written in Greek, and the writer of this book used the Septuagint to do his evidence with. He didn't have in his possession, from what I'm reading here, anything in his hand that had anything to do with what the Hebrew says. He took it from the Septuagint, which is the first translation. Well, Jeff has been telling us that for over and over again for many times. And we kind of says, yeah, okay, but I want to know what Hebrew says. Fine, I don't have a problem with what Hebrew says. But you have to look back and say, what did it say in the Septuagint? This guy got information from the Septuagint. Verse 8. By faith, or by trust, Abraham obeyed. And he was called out to a place where he would afterwards receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. So did God call him out at age 75 and Abraham understood everything on the sun? No. What did he go out for? He obeyed. Obeyed what? You remember Genesis 12th chapter? All it says was, oh, thou shalt obey me, Abraham. If you don't, I'm going to kill you. No, leave your father and your mother. Leave your country and come to a place where I want to show you. Abraham had no idea where he was going. How many of you in this room, don't raise your hands. Truth is inside of you. When God, if the creator of heaven and earth ever comes down and says something to you, I want you to go here. I want you to leave your father and your mother and family. I want you to go over here. How many of you say, my income's shot. My home's gone. I have no family. My family's gone. You mean, leave my family? Yeah. Leave my friends? Yeah. You say, you probably question God and says, no, wait a minute, where is your wisdom at? That doesn't happen to Abraham, did it? He just obeyed. There's a difference between obeying and forced to obey over death being sentenced upon you. God didn't offer him life and death. He offered him his word. And Abraham trusted his word, and Abraham obeyed. This is very important. Abraham's one of my heroes, by the way, in case you didn't know it. One of the bravest men, I think, ever one of the bravest men ever walked the face of the earth. Verse 9, by faith or by trust, he sojourned in the land of the promise as a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, and the heirs of the same promise. But what's the promise? The seed within you will be a blessing to all mankind. That's what Abraham knew. That's what Abraham believed. Abraham trusted him. It wasn't a matter of life and death. It was a matter of obeying and just doing. Because he trusted. He trusted. Not just, I believe you, God. But he trusted God. Not knowing where he's going. Many of us won't leave this town if we don't know where we're going. We won't go to New York just because we want to go. If he says go to New York, you say, I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to New York. Don't forget about New York. No, I don't go to San Francisco. But what God tells you to do, what would you do? Oh, I don't trust the people in San Francisco. Therefore, I'm not going to go. But he went. Abraham went. And that's why I want to pay real close attention here. Because I see Abraham, a totally different shadow or picture. And I see Isaac. I see Jacob. All different picture. Men who trusted and believed the word that came out of the mouth of the Creator's mouth. They didn't challenge it. They didn't question it. They didn't say, well, I don't know if you're God or not. I got to talk about stone over here. Well, now that stone's going to tell me right. No, none of them went to a stone. None of them went to a mountain somewhere and worshiped upon a mountain and waited for God to come and talk to them. No. What did they do? We live in a world in our 21st century. We cannot believe that anybody would actually trust God. We live in a world that we have to trust him or else. I have to trust him or I'm going to be punished. Or else God's going to bring forth a disease. If I don't obey God, he's going to take my child away. We live in that kind of world. And we believe we live in that kind of world. We trust that kind of world. Because we understand that kind of a world. The kind of world that says, I trust your word. It's really hard. We are human beings, are made of flesh and blood. We're just cursed with that, you might say. But we're stuck with it. So we have to come and say, what did Abraham do? Let's go on now. Verse 10 here in Hebrews. For he, Abraham, waited for a city which its foundations, whose builder and maker is Elohim. Let me ask you a question. Was Jerusalem built by man? The city built by man? Or was it built by Elohim? Who conquered the place? David. What did David do? Well, he wanted to build a temple. He wanted to build a house. And he also wanted his own castle. But God said, no, you're not going to do that. So who built it?
Solomon.
Touched by human hands. Touched by human hands. Now, David, Daniel going through a spiritual concept of that thing. It's kind of important to know the difference between the two. Did Abraham ever, question, go to the place? Did he ever see a city that was built by the Creator in his lifetime? No. Did Isaac ever see a city built by the Creator? Okay. Did Jacob ever see a city built by the Creator? So we all know the answer, right? What, if you were back in his time, we got to see evidence. He didn't need to see any evidence. He trusted God. He believed his word. He knew that his Creator was going to fulfill that city. And this chapter tells you what city it is. Let's go on. Verse 11. By faith or by trust, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, the seed in a sense. And she bore a child when she was past the age because she, what? Judged him. How? Be truthful. That he would carry out the promise. Now we didn't see that in our Hebrew, right? Didn't like Sarah didn't see it. She laughed. Well, Abraham also laughed earlier. Remember that Isaac doesn't mean she laughs. It means he laughed. Remember? Abram laughed first. And then he believed. Along comes Sarah. And she laughed. And of course, we see that she will seem to be frightened or terrified. She lied. You know, we don't like liars. Cast them out. One of those commandments, right? Thou shalt not bear false witness. No, not bear false witness. But that's not really telling a lie. Okay. We get technical all over the place. Let's continue on here in Hebrews. He says now, verse 12, therefore from one man and him as good as dead were born as many of the stars in the sky in multitude. I talked to you about what Apostle Paul says, who are his seed, right? Who are the seeds of Abraham? Why? We trust whom? We trust the Torah? Or we trust the Creator of heaven and earth? He will back up his word. He'll support his word. He'll carry out his will. That's what really faith and belief is. That's when you say, I live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. What do you think? Was that worthless words that Moses both wrote and Yahshua quoted? Do we pick and choose what word we want to use? No. We have to learn every one of these things. In our lifetime, God gave us most of us 70 years of our life to figure it out. All right? Let's continue on now. Verse 13. And all died in trusting. Who died in trusting? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Sarah. Those are the ones that are named. They all died trusting, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. I mean, they actually saw visions. They had nightmares or dreams. It doesn't say that. Do you remember one of those things that Abraham had? Abraham was like a nightmare. Remember that nightmare he had? It was nice, not a good one. It was a nasty one. And he did that thing. He said, here's where your ancestors are going to go, by the way. Your kids are going to go down there 400 years from now. They're going to be down there. And they're going to be in bondage. I'm going to put them in prison. What did Abraham do? Protest? Yell, shout, and scream to you ungodly God? He had to accept it and believed it. When he had to kick out Hagar and Ishmael, which he loved, was that something he just said, I ain't going to do it? No, he did it. And only gave them enough privilege, enough supplies for one day. And he sent them toward a very specific well. And she didn't see it at first, but that's a different story. The story of Hagar is a blessing in disguise. He says, verse 14, for those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. They didn't have a home. They lived in tents. Right? Well, after a while, it gets kind of uncomfortable. Well, what happens when you live in a tent? Along comes a real strong wind. What happens to your tent? Oh. You got to rebuild it again. You start all over again, and over again, repeated and repeated and repeated. How many would you like to rebuild your house every single year or two? You say, oh, no, I got to do that. I'm going to find somebody to build a real solid house, and then I'll live in it. No, this is called trusting, believing what he's saying. Because we live in a world of the 20th century, 21st century, that we don't find, maybe within our own selves, that trust that Abraham had. That trust that Sarah had. That trust that Isaac had. That trust. Okay? Because we have to have assurance. Their assurance was only one thing. What was their assurance? His word. That's the only assurance they had. And they never had a home. They never had a home. Okay, let's bypass this for right now. You gotta understand what I'm saying. I'm looking at Hebrews, and I don't believe Hebrews is lying to me. I believe it's telling me the truth about a man named Abraham, about the woman named Sarah, as we go on, the man named Isaac, as we go on, the man named Jacob. These are very important people, because Yahshua said that God is the God of the living, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those words are very important to us to understand the pattern, because we see the pattern. God willing, we see the pattern through what he's showing us, you and me, and the entire world, whoever picks up any of the word of God, what God does, what God says, what God thinks, and how God acts. We can see it through the man named Abraham. God has shown us a prophecy, put it this way, but more his word of what he said he's going to do, and he did it. When we get that point, understand that Abraham had to go through this for a reason for us to understand, not Abraham, understand the creator of heaven and earth. And we'll have another picture when it comes to Isaac. Doesn't even come paralleling with Abraham at all. Another story about Isaac that Abraham didn't live. But Isaac lived. And we'll see a pattern. We'll see another story, effects of the creator of heaven and earth, what he's doing. And we'll see the same thing when we get to Jacob. But right now, let's go back to Genesis. That's verse 1. Let's go on to verse 2. I said, I don't think I'm going to get through this chapter at all. Excuse me. Verse 2 of 22, Genesis 22, verse 2. Then he said, Take your son, your only son, talked about that earlier, we'll talk about more a little later on perhaps, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him as a whole offering on one of the mountains in that region, which I shall tell you. So, what does Moriah mean? Break it down in Hebrew, please. If you've gone that far, Sean, break it farther down. The very first word letter begins with a mem, which just means from. Oh, Moriah, from. And the next words is association with the word Yah. From Yah, see. The last part of that verb is to see. From Yah, see. From Yah, see. Yah was going to show Abraham, oh, I want you to see something, Abraham. From me, I'm showing you something. I'm going to present something to you. I'm going to reveal something to you. Now, let me ask you a question. What do you think was going through Abraham's mind? Sacrifice my son?
That those were customs, they were doing that all over there.
Doesn't say that in the Torah.
Doesn't say that, no.
Doesn't say that in the book of Genesis. Let's take face value what it is. We have an assumption because everybody, oh, somebody else did it, so he's doing the same thing. Everybody else did it. No, this is the first time in history.
I think he was obedient because
the first time in history this has been required. Not the third time, fourth time, the 100th time, 3,000th time, 3,000,000,000th time. It's the first time. When was the first drought? Before the flood? No, it's after the flood. When did it happen? Abraham's time. First one was Abraham's time. Second one was Isaac's time. Third time was Jacob's time. Three droughts. One, two, three. Three. Now let's not go there. Now, I mean, you heard from my son many times, right? Three is going to do one or two things. The death sentence or life. Take your choice. We won't go there today. All right, so we have here, this particular place is called Moriah, or as from Yah-Si. Okay. Now, let's go to 2 Chronicles. Daniel went through this already. 2 Chronicles, chapter 3, and verse 1. Now Solomon began to build the house of Yahuwah at Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where Yah had appeared to his father David at the place that David had prepared on the threshing floor. You remember that story? Well, if you might have missed it, perhaps you should go back and read that story, both in Kings and Second Samuel, I think it was? Yeah. Now, I'll go back down to 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Now he comes into this next one, verse 13. Rush down there real quick to 13. Same story about David. And Elohim sent an angel to Jerusalem to destroy it. You mean that house, that city that God made? No, he could destroy Jerusalem. All right? And he was destroyed. As he, that angel of Elohim, was destroyed, Yahuwah looked and relented, or stopped it, basically, from the disaster. And said to the angel who was destroying, it's enough. Now restrain your hand. What did the angel do? He stopped. Where did he stop at? On the threshing floor. I find it very fascinating. As we, I'm not going to get very far in this chapter at all. I'm sorry. Now we're at this point. Let's go down to verse 18. Same chapter. This First Chronicles chapter 21, verse 18. Therefore the angel of Yahweh commanded Gad, that's the prophet, to say to David that David should go and erect an altar to Yahweh on the threshing floor. Drop down to verse 28. At that time, David saw that Yahuwah had answered him on the threshing floor. Verse 30. But David did not go out before to inquire of Elohim, for he was afraid of the sword of Yahuwah. Now, what's the threshing floor? He said Mount Moriah, where Solomon, was building a temple. The temple of Yahweh. Way back at Abraham's time. Right? He wanted to say, I'm going to show you a place. Let's go back to Genesis. I'm going to wrap this part up real fast. I can't go any farther. See if I can't get through verse 4. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of the young men. By the way, the young men means someone of the age of 20 and under. With him, and Isaac his son, slipped the wood for a whole offering, and arose and went to the place which Elohim had told him. Remember how he told him? When did he tell him? Way up here, verse 1. Verse 1, was it? Place where I will... verse 2, rather. Now 1. Verse 2. Where I will tell you. So Abraham knew where he was going. At this point in time, he knew where he was going. He's going to the area called Moriah. And he's going to one of those mountains, because he always said one of the mountains you're going to do it on top of. All right? And so these young men went with him to carry, help carry the load. And then verse 4. Then on the next day, third day, fourth day, 20th day, the third day. Interesting, isn't it? One, two, three. Forget about that. Anyway, 3 days. And what happened on that third day? They climbed the mountain. Okay, let's just play the word three for just a minute. You remember the book of Genesis chapter 1? What happened on the third day? What?
This is two problems.
What happened on the third day? Something rose up from the water. The land rose up from the water. The land was in the bottomless pit. Put another terminology. He had to separate that bottomless pit day two in order for the resurrection, quote, end of quote, of the earth coming up out of that water. Oh, that's fascinating. No one ever looks at that point of view. Okay. We won't go any farther than that. Let's go off that subject matter for right now. The word place. Now, where's it? It's a Hebrew word. It's not really a complicated word to know, but when he saw the place on the third day, what place did he see? Because God told him, I want you to sacrifice your son as a whole offering in Mount Moriah, or in the Moriah area, on one mountain. And he saw that one mountain. What do you think that one mountain is? No. What? What did he see? What was God showing him? Okay, slow down, Richard. When he went there, we haven't gone to the binding of Isaac yet. He went there and he saw something. Now remember what Daniel taught us in the past. Why did the angel could not continue killing at that location? No blood is to be spilt there. On that threshing floor. No blood. Not even the Messiah's blood was offered there. What was offered there? A ram in the thicket. I will not be able to cover that today. Do you understand what I'm trying to get at? What's the bottom line here? What is it Abraham had to go through? What, for him to see something he didn't know? In the book of Hebrews it says, he knew that if he killed Isaac, what would happen? He'd resurrect him from the dead to keep the promise he promised Abraham and that he promised Isaac. He knew that God would keep his promise, even if he had to kill his own son, because it says in Hebrews, I trust God. Over my feelings, my emotions, my thought, my innermost part. Now we could reject that. A lot of people reject the book of Hebrews as a pile of crap. That's fine. I don't. I think it tells me a tremendous amount of truth. Especially about my hero. Well, I'm just being honest with you. It's one of these men that this man tells me what God did to him. Tells me more about the basic foundation of God, the basic thought of God, the basic purpose of God, the basic thinking of God, the basic everything about God. Not about Abraham, but about God. And Abraham was blessed to be used. So he had the young men stay. And by the way, it says the boy, he was also a lad. The young man, Isaac, was probably under the age of 20, because he used the Hebrew word for young man or lad, the same thing, someone under the age of 20. You remember when Abraham went to war, and he turned, and they remember the king of Sodom wanted to give him some money or something? You know, let my young men have that. That word means those under the age of 20. We today use people in the age of 20 to go to war. Because that's the will of God, not our will. It's how you become brave. But I want to try to see if I can't get... then the question?
Yeah, quickly, burnt offering. I interpret that to mean complete offering, but I think there's something about that I'm not getting. It's more than a complete offering.
Okay, a whole offering means something's going up at a cent. The word actually whole off, I mean, that was ascending upward toward the heavens. That's what that basic foundation, that word means. So what he was going to do, offer Isaac as that one's going to go up into the heavens, in quote, into the God. Okay, and God would receive, quote, that smoke. That's why it's a pleasing, thing with God. It's not that he likes the smell of fire, likes the smell of smoke. It's a picture of us that when we, Apostle Paul says, when we are resurrected from the dead, we're not going to be made of flesh and blood. Tired, different kind of being, different elements, spiritual elements actually, which we don't understand because our eyes are blinded by God for a reason. That's his will. It's okay with me. Does that kind of answer your question a little bit? Okay, good. That's fine. That's why you're here to ask questions, and I'll do my very best to come up with an answer. Before I want to go any further, I'm going to talk about the word lamb. I don't need to talk about the word lamb, but that's not what was taken. The lamb was not to be sacrificed. Did you notice that? It wasn't the lamb. Isaac said, "Where's the lamb?" And he said, "The Lord will provide." What? Oh, yeah, okay. He knew exactly. Abraham knew exactly. What, that God's going to put a ram up there? No. He knew exactly what God wanted him to offer. And it was going to be Isaac. I'm going to I'll have to break on this one just a minute. I'll do my very best. I'll just stop at this verse 9. And it came to the place on one of the mountains which Elohim had told earlier to Abram or Abraham. What mountain? What place? He saw the mountain, he saw that place, and on the third day he saw it. He knew exactly, because he had a description by God what it was going to look like. And so he went. If you've ever been in Jerusalem, it's quite an interesting... It's very hilly. It's hard. It's a real steep mountain, by the way. And you really had to do work getting up there. If you didn't have these nice modern cars and elevators and all that kind of stuff, you know, you had to work getting up there. It doesn't take very long to get up there, by the way. It's a couple hours, you're up there, even if you're in good shape. And he said that he bound Isaac. This is the only place in the entire Bible where that word is used. No place else. Bound. There are other places that, you know, in your English translations, remember the woman that put a ribbon around the wrist or whatever it was, and it says they bound this one. No, that's not the wrong word. It means she just tied something on there. He was bound. Why? He was told to make sure that he doesn't run away. What? We won't talk about it today. Oh, next question.
If it's a picture of the Messiah, it was not the Messiah's ran up there and said, "Hey guys, let's do this." He was captured and walked through it willingly, but he was still
willingly.
Captured.
Those are precious little words, because it says Isaac trusted God, because he's already promised by God that through him the seed would travel. Though the test is on Abraham, what do you think went through Isaac's mind? Huh? Okay, I'm gonna call it quits here, just with one statement. How many times did the Messiah pray before he was killed? And each time he says, "Don't kill me!" Oh, second, "Don't kill me!" Nonetheless, "Don't kill me!" Nonetheless, "Your will be done." In a sense, he was bound. Was he bound by the very same thing Isaac was bound with? He is bound with the word of his father. That is a test. Powerful one. Not because he's a liar, a cheater, a crook, or an untrustworthy person. Because he didn't want to die. We're heading for Passover. So I'm going to pause on this particular subject matter. And next week we're going to talk about the Passover. We're going to talk about Passover relationship to Messiah. How when we see Isaac at this particular point in time, because another phrase about Isaac. Isaac was not called anything except fear of God. Fear. Fear of God. Isaac was known for fear of God. Now, we put that in a negative phrase, don't we? Because we should not be afraid. We should not fear anything. But Isaac, known as the fear of God. Now, said the second lesson about God is going to be the story of Isaac, which will relate to you another aspect of the story of Yeshua HaMashiach.